The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on August 3, 1994 in Copenhagen, South Africa. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 21, Verse 24.
Translation by His Divine Grace today, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Any king who does not teach his citizens about their respective duties in terms of varna and ashrama, but who simply exacts tolls and taxes from them, is liable to suffer for the impious activities which have been performed by the citizens. In addition to such degradation, the king also loses his own fortune. Translation of repetition. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A king, governor, or president should not take the opportunity to occupy his post without also discharging his duty. He must teach the people within the state how to observe the divisions of varna and ashrama. If a king neglects to give such instructions and simply is satisfied with levying taxes, then those who share in the collection, namely all the government servants and the head of the state, are liable to share in the impious activities of the general masses. One of the perks of working for the government. The laws of nature, we don't take taxes.
Some deduction.
The laws of nature are very subtle. For example, if one eats in a place which is very sinful, he shares in the resultant reaction of the sinful activities performed there. It is a Vedic system, therefore, for a householder to call Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to eat at ceremonial performances in his house, because the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas can immunize him from sinful activities. But it is not the duty of rigid Brahmanas and Vaishnavas to accept invitations everywhere. There is, of course, no objection to taking part in feasts in which prasada is distributed. That was all in brackets from it is the Vedic system. There are many subtle laws which are practically unknown to people in general, but the Krishna consciousness movement is very scientifically distributing all this Vedic knowledge for the benefits of the people of the world. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport. Text 24, Chapter 21, Canto 4 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Tat Sat. Shri Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srimad Bhagavat Gantaraj ki
jai.
Pitu Maharaj is revealing his own realizations, his conclusions about his duty as a king. He was just coronated recently, and he is now explaining to all of the assembled Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and Rishis that they can take note of what his conclusion are and give him any advice in case what he's saying isn't right. It's an interesting point that here A lot of times someone might have a conclusion and they just take it, well, this is my conclusion and it's the final word. But even a great emperor like Prithu Maharaj, who's also an incarnation of God, he's showing by example that some administrative authority, although he may have some concept in how to do things, it's good to reveal that, to discuss it, to explain it to some senior persons and get their input. And that way one can be sure that in fact they have made the correct decision. So we can see here Prithu is not, Maharaj is not, you know, that type of like autocrat that it's just he's imposing his will on everybody else blindly. But he's also, first of all, he's in the assembly of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and Rishis there, sages. He's telling his concept that this is my duty as a king, as a head of state, as a head of government. This is what I should be doing. I should not only see that the citizens are protected materially, that they're engaged according to their natures and are given a proper employment. Simultaneously, I should also see that progressively they are spiritually advanced. This is my duty. Otherwise, if I just take money from them and I don't see to their all-around progress and stability, materially and spiritually, then I'm basically robbing from them. And I'll have to take their karma. So he was presenting, of course, everything he presented is exactly correct. And Srila Prabhupada is revealing here that this is actually some of the very subtle laws of nature. The laws of karma are most powerful. And they act in a indefatigable, what's it called? Insurmountable way. You cannot get around it. I know that Srila Prabhupada, he was very conscious about these things. Although sometimes for preaching, like in Africa or in India in the beginning, he used to accept a lot of invitations from life members for the sake of preaching. But then gradually he also even limited that to a large degree. But it's interesting, like I heard how the Ramanuja Acharyas, if they get an invitation from someone, what they'll do is, first of all, they'll send their brahmanas the day before, say, clean up everything, scrub up the kitchen, clean everything, clean your rooms before their acharya goes there. And then they come with their own altar, golden altar with the deities, their own pot, their own plate. They set up the altar, then they cook everything in their own pots with their own brahmana cooks. All the ingredients are provided by the household people who might cut up the, be allowed to cut the sabji. Then they prepare everything and they offer to the deities. Then they feed all of the brahmanas and gurus and everyone. And then the householders, the house and the family members, and they get to take prasadam from the deities. And for that opportunity of having this sacrifice be performed in their house, they give a handsome donation in advance. That is interesting, because there you can see that, well, everything is directly Krishna prasadam. And basically we use this system when we were traveling Sankirtan. We would have our small Varnitai deities when I used to go, and we'd go to someone's house. We found it was much better to prepare and offer everything to our own deities independently of the Grihasthas, and they were very happy. And it was like, although we were their guests, it was like we were their host, because we would sit them down and give them Krishna prasadam. So it was a whole nice reciprocation. They were giving us all the ingredients, so we were feeding them the Krishna prasadam. I remember Srila Prabhupada, he was instructing one time when we were traveling to Kumbh Mela, the kind of intricacies about different accepting different kinds of food stuff. That one type of food, if you get like depending on what the food is, a certain degree of karma is transferred. If you accept a glass of water from someone, even then you have to take some karma from them. And one time he wrote me a letter that when we were asked whether, you know, we go into the villagers in Mayapur, sometime a Muslim villager offers us a glass of water, a piece of fruit. He says, better not even to take water. But he said that if you have to, take a whole fruit. Don't take it cut. The whole fruit is better than cut. Of course, you never know what they cut with their knife anyway, so it's better. But then he also explained that there's like pakka and kacha food. First is water. The next after that is fruit and just raw food. I mean, completely uncooked, like fruit and things. That's the next level. Then you have, when you're eating grains, then there's two kinds of grains. One they call pakka and kacha. Pakka means it's fried. Puris, halva, pakuras, parotas, things like that. The things which are cooked in ghee, apparently they are like considered more purified and they don't transfer as much karma. And then the final thing is kacha, where you're actually taking rice and boiled things, just regular rice dal sabji. So taking boiled grains like rice, that is considered like complete transfer of karma. So it's a very strong custom amongst the Brahmanas in India that they won't take rice from the hand of anyone that was previously followed, who's not following pure habits and things like that. Of course, now it's very rare to find someone that's following your pure habits, but still the custom stands. So one of the ceremonies they do, like in Bengal, after the marriage, is called Bobat, which means that the custom is that the bride will come with the husband to the house of the father of the boy, and she becomes part of their household. So one of the ceremonies to show that she's been accepted in the family is that all the elders of the family have to sit down and she has to personally feed them rice with her own hand. And if they eat rice from her hand, it means that they're accepting, because then they're just like the karma is merging and they're accepting her. And if they don't accept, you know, like that means it's like it's a big insult. Anyway, they usually accept. So. But all these rituals and things, they have got something to do with that. It's all intermingled with the laws of karma and it's all culturally based. And you know, it's very rare to find a Brahmana who's really following a sattvic diet. So even though they may feed rice, they may give other things we don't want to mention. But the origins are all coming from the subtle laws. In other words, everything we do, every kind of interaction, we accept something from someone. Then we have to take the karma. So a head of state, a head of government, Prabhupada's explaining this point. The preacher, when he's saying, if I accept taxes, I have to produce some benefit for that money I'm receiving. Otherwise, I'll receive their karma too. In other words, in exchange of a fair work, there's no karma. One time Prabhupada told the devotee another letter, that if he had, this was in New York in the 60s, that if he has to eat outside, if you buy the food, then there's no transfer of karma. And they explain that although karma is not transferred, you still get the mentality of the person who cooked the food. Of course, that's assuming you're buying vegetarian food. You don't get the person that cooked it karma, whatever the karma involved in the food that's there. That's why we say Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. If we have to eat something which is not prasadam, which is vegetarian, and we can't offer it in some emergency situation. I remember telling all these things one time, Srila Prabhupada sent me, when we were on the train going to Allahabad for the Kumbh Mela. He was very hungry and they forgot to pack him any lunch, just a normal kind of, and pack a proper thing. So he knew this one, because he used to travel that route a lot, he knew one station. And he said that, well, in a traveling, it's like an emergency situation, so we can eat something from a cooked outside. We should get some fried puris and sabji. So fried is pakka, and you're buying it, so it's not too much transfer. But what you should do is stand there when they're cooking it, and watch them cook it. And he first said, check out, you know, whether the oil is clean or not. Smell it, you know, kind of the smoke coming up. If you don't get knocked over, then it's all right. So we had to do this, go out in the train station and have them cook up in front of us some hot puris and brought that in for Srila Prabhupada. Like an emergency situation. We're traveling for all day, all night, nothing to eat. So there are a lot of intricacies, and there's like a, on all these things, and I'm sure that Sridhar Maharaj, you can tell a lot of other stories. I remember in Bombay, I was there, Srila Prabhupada was invited to one Grihastha's house, and was there, and he was complimenting, you know, I had no appetite before I came here, by smelling the prasadam, I'm feeling hungry, it's like that. Prabhupada was very merciful, he had me sit next to him and take prasadam, and then he chanted Mahaprasade Govinde Nam Brahmani Vaishnavi prayer. And he was starting to eat, and I was like so foolish, I just like without thinking, I asked Srila Prabhupada, do you want us to chant Surya Vijayal? Then he like looked at me like, you know, like, he said, no, it's not necessary every time. I just really felt foolish, so why did I ask that? Like, whatever Prabhupada is perfect. So, no, very.
I remember once we ate at the Girls, and we were all sitting up at the table, and we were just about getting ready to eat. Prabhupada turned to me and he said, have you said your thread yet? As if you know if you offered food your dietary. And then we just started eating.
In the beginning, he was a little liberal, but at the end, he was telling us to go and offer the prasadam and do everything. That actually purifies the household. When they know everything's going to be offered and everything's prepared like that, and you're taking prasadam. So that's the ideal situation. I heard that there's like professional brahmanas that go around just eating from people's homes. Prabhupada wrote a satirical drama about that kind of brahmana. But then Bhanu Maharaj said that they're completely black. It's like, you know, it's like gradually turned black. It's like because it's absorbing all the karma from the people that they're eating. There's definitely, it's recommended that everything should be offered, prepared with that consciousness that it's being offered to Krishna. I kept remembering how devotees said they go out. As soon as they ate the prasadam, they got sick, you know, they had diarrhea. But no one really... It was very nice, no reason why they should get sick, but somehow they get sick. It was that kind of an immediate reaction. So now when you're a little careful and you see that everything's offered and done in the proper way, you find the preachers, they don't get so affected, their mentalities don't get changed, and they can go on preaching more effectively. So it's important to know these things. I mean, I heard that sometimes devotees go out and buy food cooked in some karmi restaurants, and in places where they're not pure vegetarian, they just eat a vegetarian food, and that's very, very dangerous. You have to take the mentality of the people that are cooking, and so it starts to affect the devotees. And in the past, when traveling Sankirtan, people are very careless like that. Now we find that many of those devotees, they couldn't maintain their preaching. So we want to remain preaching, we have to know these subtle laws and be careful. Because whatever limited stock of Krishna conscious strength we have, we don't want to deplete it by just kind of carelessly eating or carelessly accepting charity. It's another reason why when we do Sankirtan, we give all the Lakshmi to the temple. And we take from the temple only whatever is our, you know, whatever is agreed with the temple, however the system is, our allowance or whatever. And that way we're getting from Krishna. We've given everything to Krishna, now we're getting from Krishna. If we take directly from the people, then we have to also share in the karma. So by giving everything to Krishna, then Krishna, he burns up all the karmas, and then we're just working for Krishna. We're serving Krishna and receiving our basic needs from Krishna so we can continue with our service. So all these things may seem unimportant to someone. What's that? Take it now or take it right off the top. but in our consciousness and in terms of karma and everything, to do everything authorized is important. Someone told me how one grihastha said that how they'd gone out and were collecting money from people and then using it to maintain their griha, which is totally actually prohibited for grihasthas to do that. And said after that, everything started going, the law had the money stolen, was getting sick, that this thing happened. It's like, you could immediately feel like he was getting overloaded by the karma of the people they were begging from, as if they were sadhus, as if they were in the renounce order. So these laws of karma are there, and if we know the intricacies, we can protect ourselves. The Prita Maharaj, he was concerned. This is my understanding, this is my duty. If I do this, then in the end I'll go back to Krishna. In the end my life will be perfect. I won't get all bogged down by other people's karma. So he was clearing that. So similarly, we should be clear that what we're doing is karma-free. The whole secret of devotional service is to have karma-free diet, karma-free life. No karma. So we are not accumulating any new karma. But sometimes by acting carelessly, we may get karmas of other people, and you find devotees getting sick, and you don't know why the devotee is getting sick, but it may be because of just some careless activity, they're also getting sick, not even through their own karma, but because of the karma of people that they're preaching to and carelessly accepting karma when it should have been offered and done in such a way that it would be taken by Krishna, who can absorb unlimited karma. And this way also, the gurus, they accept karma from their disciples. So often a guru gets sick, Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna has various purposes for that. So these are various intricacies of the laws of karma. There was some brahmana, there was some man in the Jagannath, Vrindavan, whose occupation was to take the gold from, he was the burn people, cremation, but he would steal the gold from their teeth and he would do some sneaky business when they were being cremated. Which we heard that even some of these funeral homes, they like kind of steal the gold fillings from people and do kind of foul things before they bury them. So apparently doing all this is also like a heavy karma. So he would try to go and give his very wealthy man in Vrindavan, he tried to give his money to some brahmanas, but no brahmanas would even accept a donation from him. Finally, like I had to kind of just go and put it in a hundi of some temple where just directly give it to Krishna. And that way he was getting the mercy from a deity. But no brahmana for their personal maintenance would accept a donation just from a materialistic person like that. Because directly they accept a donation from him, that heavy karma. So there was, as I said, the brahmanas would not accept charity from anyone and everyone for themselves. For Krishna we can accept from a broader sphere, but although when someone asked Prabhupada, can we accept money if we know it's like drug money or something like that, and he was very restrictive about such things. He was not open to just undiscriminate use of such things. So there's definitely all kind of intricacies to karma. Now, if we act in a proper way, we get immunized. We're immunized. We go, it's like we're going in society, but we don't get so affected. But even then, by day-to-day interactions with the material world, we can get some rub-off of people's materialistic mentality. That's why we come before Rahalaman Ishwara, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. We pray before them, we chant. This helps to purify our consciousness, seeing the beautiful form of the deities. That's a purification for our whole vision and consciousness. And it's like if you see some horrible illicit activity or something outside, and then the Vedas say you see someone naked or you see something that's, then you look up at the sun just for a second, and it kind of burns out that image that you just saw in your eye. That's like another way of purifying. But the more transcendental way, we're seeing every day, like in London, there's so many sinful things going on. So you see every day the deities, and that is a type of purification. And of course, now that we see the deities, so we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And Srila Prabhupada, he also explained how that's another reason why it's important to go to the holy dhams. That there may be some subtle effect of being in the Western world. You may get gradually a kind of develop a enjoying attitude, perspective in life. Subtly, just by being in this situation for so long. That we were out even noticing it, just like there's some example that if you throw a frog in the boiling water, the frog like jumps out. It won't go in, but if you put a frog in every, just gradually increase the heat of the water, that you can literally boil the frog alive and it won't jump out. It won't realize that there's a difference. Every, you're only changing it very gradually. Someone used this example to demonstrate that we may not gradually get contaminated by association with the material world and not realize it. Like if suddenly someone puts a big maya in front of us, oh, you know, you object. But gradually a person can get compromised by little micro changes and compromises with Krishna. It's like that story about the sannyasi disciple of the guru who was given the order to read Bhagavad Gita. You know that example? Everyone knows that? All the devotees know it. You know the example? You know it, then I just... Thus there was a sannyasi disciple. He was... his guru told him, you just stay here and you just... that you read Bhagavad Gita. This is my order to you. So he was in a cave. He was reading Bhagavad Gita every day on the order of his guru. But then there was a mouse that used to come and chew on the pages of the Bhagavad Gita. So he became disturbed that this mouse was creating so many problems chewing his Bhagavad Gita. In order to read Bhagavad Gita, he had to take care of the mouse. Stop the mouse. So then he thought, I'll get a cat. And by having a cat, then the cat will keep away the mouse. So then he got a cat, and the cat was there, and the cat kept the mouse away. So he could read the Bhagavad Gita. But then the cat was mooing and hungry, so he had to go out and get some milk to feed the cat to keep away the mouse so he could read the Bhagavad Gita. But then every day to go out and get some milk to feed the cat to keep the rat away so he could read the Bhagavad Gita was troublesome. So he thought that it might be easier if I just have a cow. By having a cow, we'll give milk to feed the cat, keep away the rats, and read the Bhagavad Gita. So then, he got a cow, but then the cow was mooing and the cow was hungry, so he had to go and feed the cow to get the milk, to feed the cat, keep away the rats, and read the Bhagavad Gita. Everything was always for Krishna. It was for reading the Bhagavad Gita, following the order of the Guru. But then he found that so much trouble to keep the cow that he decided to get an employee take care of the cow, so that that way you know, he could get milk, feed the cow, cat, keep away the rats, and read the Bhagavad Gita. Then he found that the employee was not very diligent. He had to actually oversee the employee to get the proper work from him. If he didn't oversee. So then he would, you know, how would he get the time to read the Bhagavad Gita every time he has to oversee the employee who's taking care of the cow to get the milk, to feed the cat, to keep away the rat who was eating the Bhagavad Gita. So finally, a great consideration of everything and his ultimate objective, reading the Bhagavad Gita, the only thing he said that any hired employee does not work with a full consciousness, that the only thing to do is get married. Because if he gets married, the wife will be totally dedicated and work, you know, husband and wife work together as one and with complete surrender and self-conscious and so on and so forth. He had it all figured out, theoretically. So in order to take care of the employee, who would milk the cow, to get the milk, to feed the cat, keep away the rats, he could read the Bhagavad Gita, he thought it was just, the only thing he could do was to get married. So then he got married, But then he found that the wife had other necessities also. And so in order to keep the wife satisfied, so she'd watch over the man who would keep, you know, milk the cow and everything. So what happened was there a few children came up, and then finally what happened is he forgot about reading the Bhagavad Gita, and he was out working and plowing the fields and maintaining his family, and the whole thing got deviated from the whole original path. His guru came along, found the cave empty, then he saw that there his disciples, he's got a big house, and he's got a farm, you know, and cows, and the whole thing. He said, what happened? What are you doing? I just told you read the Bhagavad Gita. I said, Guru Dev, everything was just following your instruction. It was all, this is just for reading the Bhagavad Gita. So by making little micro step adjustments and to read the Bhagavad Gita, finally he got so micro stepped out that he was really out. And finally, he got totally distracted from the original order of the Guru, which was a simple order for a sannyasi disciple to stay there and read the Bhagavad Gita. But he had somehow rationalized each step that this was for Krishna, this was for reading the Bhagavad Gita. But after a while, it became so far removed from the original purpose that it became what we call an over-endeavor. Practically, it's better to just to, you know, scare away the rat himself in the beginning and keep reading the Bhagavad Gita and wear it around his neck or something. Whatever, he could have found some other solution. But somehow he went on this way and just gradually, for the original purpose, it wasn't at all cost effective. And he missed the whole point of taking sannyas vows and finally even gave up his sannyas. But he'd rationalized the whole thing. So this is the danger. That sometimes we may gradually just start to adjust and adjust, and there's a certain point. The example is given that you put water in the milk, you keep adding more water, pretty soon it's not watery milk, it's milky water. Now, at what point does it switch? You can only water the milk down so far before it no longer remains milk. So we have to be careful that sometimes for preaching we may do something, but if we go too far out, we actually lose our spiritual edge. So that's why devotional service is very principle-oriented. We always maintain the strict principles of Rupa Goswami. And I'm very careful to see that the ultimate objective of our principle is, in fact, being met. Srila Prabhupada was concerned that devotees preaching, they might gradually change their attitude into an enjoying attitude. So therefore he prescribed that every year there should be a big pilgrimage to Mayapur and Vrindavan. And that would be an opportunity for devotees to associate with many Vaishnavas, to be in the holy Dham. And in this way, they would get purified from that subtle tendency of developing an enjoying attitude. After all, the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness is to develop our serving attitude, seva bhava. Lord Krishna really accepts our attitude of service, bhava grihi janardhana. The more that we are service-oriented, the more that our service attitude for Guru and Krishna is expanding, that is more pleasing to Lord Krishna. That is what he is relishing. Like that example everyone knows where Krishna ate the banana peel because the devotee simply offered it with so much enthusiasm, with such a service attitude, that it didn't even matter that they offered him the wrong part of the fruit. They offered the peel instead of the banana. So the real essence of devotional service is to have the proper attitude. The externals are not as important as that inner service attitude. Although externals are also what train us up and get us in the mood or in the proper consciousness of service. So one of the ways that Prabhupada had to keep the spiritual health of the whole movement was the Mayapur Vrindavan pilgrimage, the Navadvip Parikrama, this type of association in the holy dhams. One time devotees were asking Srila Prabhupada, look at it, we're spending so much money on air tickets every year flying to Mayapur. We calculate, in those days there was maybe 200 devotees were coming, now there's about 1,500. So 200 devotees, they calculated then if you pay $1,000, $200,000. So we could build a temple and do so many things. And then Srila Prabhupada looked at them and said, and this way, We are spending so much money on food. If we didn't eat, how much money we could save for spending for Krishna? Then they all thought for a minute and said, Jai Srila Prabhupada. I all understood the point. That just like eating, you know, it's not a luxury. We cannot get out from eating, otherwise we will not be able to continue on with our service. Similarly, it's no less important that we get this transcendental association with the holy dhams for our spiritual food. It's spiritual food for our spiritual development. And so by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, by all these formulas that he's given us, so we can remain spiritually healthy, the whole body of ISKCON, by having regular deity worship, by having regular Tulsi Puja. It's interesting, many times, you know, devotees in ISKCON might feel some kind of, what would you call it, inferiority or something, because, you know, relatively speaking, we're a new branch of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tree. But living in Mayapur and seeing all the other branches, the older branches, that we are, frankly speaking, the different branch, I don't know what we call them, leaders or preachers from other branches like Gaudiya and other, they frankly come and they say that now ISKCON has got the greatest, the highest standard of all of the whole Gaudiya Sampradaya, in terms of, you know, regular sadhana. Like we all hear how the disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarathi Thakur, they wouldn't be able allowed to offer him prasadam if they didn't chant 64 rounds a day. But there might be a few exceptions, but by and large nobody's chanting 64 rounds a day, they're not even chanting 16 rounds a day. Most of them, maybe a few senior old devotees are chanting 16 rounds, but the regular standard outside of ISKCON has decreased down to chanting even 4 rounds a day. And they are commenting to me how that amongst their own group they are preaching we should do like ISKCON and have joint japa periods, get together, chant 16 rounds. And one godbrother, Srila Prabhupada, he just happened, and Mayapur happened to mention, that actually Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur didn't only tell them to chant 64 rounds. He said, you chant 64 rounds if you're here in the Dham. Otherwise, if you're out preaching and you're fully engaged in preaching, then you can chant 16 rounds, and the rest of the time you should be fully engaged in preaching and Krishna's service. So actually what Srila Prabhupada organized for ISKCON, where we are, you know, for us to sit down and chant for 8 hours a day Hare Krishna would be very difficult, considering our nature to be very active. And it would not be very promotional for the preaching if 8 hours a day we're just chanting. So Srila Prabhupada organized things in such a way that we chant 16 rounds of japa, and then we go out and preach. And that is actually completely authorized formula even by our previous acharyas. It's not that even Prabhupada made particularly an adjustment in that regard. It was something that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur directly said. Although Srila Prabhupada had the right to make adjustments. In fact, it was really something that was already proved, whatever it's worth. But apart from ISKCON, you know, people actually come and they pray, they say, actually you're doing everything it mentions in Nectar of Devotion. You have the Tulsi Puja, you have the Mangal Arati, you have the Japa, Bhagavatam, you the whole sadhana which is mentioned in Nectar of Devotion and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in your morning program it's all included. All the major things which are included are prescribed, are provided for in your daily sadhana. In other words, the ISKCON program, we shouldn't have any kind of inferiority complex, so we shouldn't think that somehow we are actually having the best program, best complete program by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And if we simply follow the program that Srila Prabhupada gave, we can see that how the movement is maintaining very healthily and expanding. It's when we, you know, somehow don't do what Srila Prabhupada advises us, or we try to change something, then we get in trouble. But Srila Prabhupada has given us a perfect program. Now this is, and that way we just need to be very fixed up, very dedicated in following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, just like, otherwise we'll fall in the same fate as the young monkeys who didn't follow the old monkeys. You know that history. And maybe it's too long. It'll take at least 10 minutes to tell everyone. You see, there was once a clan of monkeys, and there was a very wise monkey, a grandfather monkey, who was over all the other monkeys, and he was guiding them in the forest. He was very wise, and they could live in a very happy way, his children, their grandchildren, even great-grandchildren. There, all the whole monkey dynasty was there. Everyone was following his instructions, and things were going very nicely. So somehow they came they're living in the forest. Nearby, the king of that particular forest and that kingdom, he had many young princes and princesses. And they said that in our garden, we have got no monkeys. We would like to have some monkeys in our garden. That would be very nice. So then the king told, okay, you can have monkeys, you have to feed them. No problem. He said, we would like to have monkeys and feed them. We'll feed them nice fruits. So somehow the princes and princesses, they found this clan of monkeys in the forest, and then they lured them, attracted them to the garden. And the wise monkey said, it's all right. We can be in the garden for some time. And he was observing everything, and he was lying out. Well, monkeys, they're used to eating kind of simple fruits in the forest. Now they're getting ripe bananas, mangoes, lychees, all kinds of really succulent fruits. So they were really enjoying luxurious fruits and the easy life in the garden of the king. So the wise monkey, he's just observing, said so long everything was all right. But one day, the ram, the male sheep ram from a full coat of wool, he noticed that the ram had gone into the kitchen of the king and was stealing some food and was driven out by the cook. When the wise monkey saw that, he immediately understood what would happen. He called all the monkey clan together and said, okay, we have been here up to now, there's been no problem. It's been very suitable. But now it is not suitable for us to stay here. We should immediately go from this place back to the forest. Well, young monkeys are really attached. They're having a good life. And they said, well, how could we go back to the forest? We're getting good fruits, and there the fruits are bitter and sour and scanty. And here we're really getting nice fruits. We're enjoying it here. He said, no, we should go back to the forest right away. It's very dangerous here now. So could you explain to us what is the danger? No, it's very dangerous. You didn't see? The ram went into the kitchen and was taking the food from the king's kitchen. This is very dangerous. So the young monkey, is very dangerous. The ram went in. What does that have to do with us? We are not rams, we're monkeys. No, if the ram goes into the kitchen, eventually what's going to happen is that the cook is going to get so angry with the ram that he's going to just ignite the ram on fire. And the young monkey said, okay, ignite the ram on fire. What does that have to do with us? We're monkeys. No. If the ram is ignited on fire, the ram lives in the same stable as all the king's horses. And that was the old time when horses were the main military weapon. They used the cavalry and everything. So when the ram is burned, he's going to run back into the stable with all the horses. And when the horses smell the burnt ram, and he runs in with the wool burning, and he runs against all of them, they're going to get agniphobia, fire phobia, whatever it's called. I don't know the technical name anymore, but agniphobia. They'll get freaked out by the fire, and after that, from this phobia, nobody can ride the horses. You understand the danger? And all the monkeys are listening, and they couldn't figure it out. They said, but we're not horses. We're not rams. We're monkeys. What has it got to do with us? So why don't you just accept All right, I'll tell you. You're not understanding because you're just neophytes. You don't understand the implication. When these horses have Agni phobia, the only cure for Agni phobia is a special Ayurvedic medicine, and one of the essential ingredients is monkey fat. Monkey fat. Yes, and all of you are quite fat. Then one monkey said, no, but we're the pets of the king. Princes and princesses, they would never slaughter their poor, their pets. You don't understand. What does the king care about the pets of the princes? Is when his cavalry, his whole military strength is in jeopardy. He's vulnerable to being attacked by any other kingdom. He won't hesitate to sacrifice some pet monkeys to save his kingdom. So you stay or not, that's up to you, but I cannot stand here and watch my entire dynasty go down the tube, go down the, just be finished. It is not safe here now. As long as it was safe, I allowed you to do this, but now it is not safe. I am going back to the forest. Those who want to come with me, you can come. Others, you stay at your own risk. I cannot stand here and watch the end of all of you. So then there was a group of the young monkeys. They didn't follow the old monkey. They decided to stick it out and enjoy the fruits. But the old monkey went with some and went back into the forest. So then one day, the ram, he went into the kitchen. That day was the king's birthday. There was a big cake there, all decked up, triple layer cake or something, four layer, whatever. Really, you know, the chef had put a lot of work into this. And the ram came right in and started chewing into it. That cook got so angry that he just, they're cooking with wood fire. He just pulled out one of the flaming wood things, said, okay, you XYZ. And he lit the ram on fire. The ram caught on fire. The wool was burning. He ran right back to his stable and was started running, freaked out with all the horses. All the horses got totally freaked out. Just jumping up, and then there's this burning smell, and they just got completely freaked out. And they all got fire phobia. The news got to the king that now none of the horses will let anyone mount them. They're all totally freaked out. Called his Ayurvedic veterinarians. What is the cure? Our horses have got fire phobia, find out what's wrong when they came back. Sir, they've got fire phobia. This is the thing, you require this medicine, this herb, this plant, this leaf, this thing, and you need also monkey fat. Oh, monkey fat. We got a bunch of fat monkeys in our garden. But, Lord, they're your princes and princesses' pets. If they get, they're going to be very upset. No, you do it at night when they're all sleeping. You go there, catch all the monkeys, and get them. Some of the monkeys, I noticed, they already left. So they won't know. We just say they went back to the forest. What to do? It's life, isn't it? We had to save the kingdom. Even for I had to sacrifice the pets of my own children for the welfare of the kingdom. We cannot be without a cavalry and an army. It puts us vulnerable. We have to see to the welfare of the greater. Sacrifice a few monkeys is the least we can do for saving the entire kingdom. Like this, so then the fate of the monkeys was sealed. That night they were all captured and cooked up. And the wise monkey had already left. You could see the writing on the wall, but they didn't believe him. But exactly that's what happened. So you all understand the moral of the story. Who is the wise old monkey? Allegorically. Yes, the spiritual master. Sometimes the neophyte may not understand why the spiritual master is saying, do like this, go on Sankirtan, do like this, go to Mayapur, or whatever, so many instructions he may give. Don't do this. But the spiritual master, he has the vision coming down from the disciplic succession. We have to follow the instructions of Guru. Who are the young monkeys who didn't follow? Who are they? We hope it's not you. You're all very sincere monkeys who are following their guru. You're sincere disciples following your guru. It sounded funny, right? The disciples who didn't follow the guru, right, didn't follow the disciples who don't follow the guru, who get too much engrossed in sense gratification, and so they start to compromise. Instead of following strictly the instructions of the guru, instead they compromise for a more comfortable life, more comfortable situation, whatever, and then what happens is they spiritually deplete their force and finally they get finished. And actually, this is a very important instruction. This story was told by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur not too long before he left the world. And he gave the purport also that sometimes the guru leaves early when he sees that his disciples are no longer willing to follow his instructions. That he decides to go back to Krishna early. And this Indrika Srila Prabhupada said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur left frustrated that his disciples were not strictly following his instructions. And when Vrindavan, we asked Srila Prabhupada when he was told us he was going to leave the world, we said, Prabhupada, it's not that you're angry with us and you're leaving because you're dissatisfied. He said, no, I'm very satisfied. It's not that I'm leaving like that. Krishna wants me to go now. This was this sometimes happens where the guru, when he sees that he can't help his disciples any longer, they're not following, they may just say, what can I do? I don't want to see them all get destroyed and go back to Krishna. So we have to be very careful, learning from all the previous mistakes that anyone has ever made, and to not make similar mistakes. And we know that when we very carefully follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, we take his mood of delivering this Krishna conscious Sankirtan movement to everyone as our top priority. As samadhi is later, now we are to give out this mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. By following Prabhupada's instructions, that we are under his shelter of Guru and Krishna. When we go against those instructions, then we are in a very dangerous position. Just like the monkeys who didn't follow the instruction of the wise guru, wise old monkey, they ended up being roasted and processed for curing the agni phobia of the horses. So here Pitu Maharaj, he's explaining already ahead of time, he's not making any mistake. Although he's the emperor, but he's already telling all of the sages, this is my idea. So in advance he's getting it clear that whether they approve of what his opinion is, what his decision is, and how to manage his kingdom, if he gets the go ahead, then he'll proceed. And that's what we should do in our own personal life. We should get the blessing of the guru beforehand, before we make a decision, to be sure that it's the proper decision. We may make a decision, but before we act on it, just like Peter Mahar, he made a decision. This is what I should do. This is what my decision is. But before he would act on it, he asked all the sages. His decision was correct. The sages agreed and everything went forward first class. Sometimes someone already does something and they come to the guru, is it alright? It's like already done. It's alright or not. What is the difference? It's already done. In retrospect, you can find out whether you did right, but now we just have to adapt with the new situation. It might not have been the best alternative. So the ideal thing is before we do something, we are inquisitive and we are sure that what we're doing is correct according to Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, according to time, place and circumstance. So this is a very safe way of proceeding. So these are very sanguine instructions given here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we can use in our daily, day-to-day, own personal spiritual life. As things happen, we can always, when we make a decision what we want to do in our spiritual life, before we act on it, we should get the sanction of Sadhu and Guru, get the sanction from the authorities, Guru or his representative. And this way we know that we're protected by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you. Time for questions, comments? Maharaj, so you have a comment to illuminate us?
Maharaj, could be something more to be referred to. Presumably they're universal in human society. Does the fact that a person has been initiated mean that in this sampradaya I mean that those laws are, they become more sensitive or more refined in their impact?
Being initiated, we should become more expert in these subtle laws so that we can avoid the effect. Nityananda Prabhu said that the initiated devotee, by following the instructions of the guru, they do not accrue any karma. But if they go outside the parameters approved by sadhu, shastra and guru, if they commit sinful activities, then they are responsible. It's not that if I'm initiated, I go and commit a sin, that means I won't get the karma. I'll get the karma. In fact, I may get it even quicker. I may get it instant. It's up to Krishna. Now we put our life under Krishna's hand, and he'll directly, personally decide how to administer the karma. It's not so mechanically being done. Now Krishna is directly administering. But the karma, to a large degree, that depends on how surrendered we are. Sometimes we may take initiation, but we may not really surrender. We go through the motion, but internally we're not really giving our surrender to Krishna and Guru. We have our own internal agenda, which we have not revealed. So all these things are understood by Krishna. If we're 100% surrendered, he'll take 100% control of our life. If we're 50% surrendered, then we take 50% like that. But as long as we're following the instructions of Guru and Krishna properly, we're not, we're protected from the karmas. If we are disobeying or going outside of that parameter, then we are responsible. Now in that sincere execution of our devotional service, if due to simply inexperience we make some accidental mistakes, those things are covered to a large degree. We may still have to take some token reaction for that. But Krishna may not hold us fully responsible. Although technically we are responsible because it was done in good faith, we may not be held fully responsible. Or he may just by the force of devotional service, those effects may also get burnt up. One time Srila Prabhupada, he got his finger, one drop of blood came, and he said that actually I should have got the karma of having my whole head cut off. But by Krishna's mercy, just one drop of blood was taken instead. So we can get just a small token. If we're fully surrendered, maybe a small token will pay for a bigger one. Say, if you're 99% surrendered, then 1% will pay for another 99. If 50%, then you might have to pay half or whatever. That's hard to say. There's no strict formula for that. It's ultimately up to Krishna. But we know that you get a token. It's a likelihood. Although sometimes by very active preaching and by helping others. See, when young devotees are going out in Sankirtan or distributing prasadam, they're helping by helping others to be Krishna conscious. In fact, they are freeing themselves from many offenses and many obstacles in their own spiritual life. By helping others, you get a surcharge, extra bonus kind of blessing. So that's why, although someone may say that neophytes, they don't know much, how should they preach, but Prabhupada gave that by distributing books, knowing at least what's in the books and being explained, maybe we cannot explain everything in the books, but generally we have some idea. That even the new devotees may have some idea, but by giving the book to someone they can read, then they get so much benefit. So that helps the young devotee also to get advance very quickly. Side by side, young devotees should read and should build up their own spiritual knowledge as much as possible so that they can know these intricacies of the laws of nature. They can develop their attachment more and more for Krishna, and they have a very clear philosophical understanding. So we need to grow in our understanding. That's why bhakti vedanta, devotion and knowledge, the two things go side by side. Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you very much.
Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavat ki
jai.
Shri Shri Radha Lalaneshwara ki
jai.
Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra ki
jai.
Nitai Gaur ki
jai.
Gopar ki
jai.
Guru Parampara ki
jai.
Nitai Gopremanand ki
jai.